My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. Jeff Lerner, your host, always so excited to be back, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, we are joined by Henry Amar. He's a human behavior expert, entrepreneur, podcast host, and speaker, and also, I always have to add in, very serious musician, because my audience knows I'm a former professional jazz musician. And so I really align and kind of appreciate what I've learned about Henry, which I'm excited to learn much more, of how his journey from music to business to ultimately living his purpose and helping others do the same. Again, my audience that knows me goes, oh, that sounds a lot like Jeff's arc. So we'll have a really interesting conversation. He's the founder of Ultimate Impact Institute for Leadership, which works with both individuals and corporations using powerful science-backed tools to increase impact and bottom line. Love that. Those are not opposites, despite what corporate America sometimes acts like. Using an influential, trauma-informed, and empowering proven leadership approach, he's been doing over 25 years of study on human behavior, works with celebrities, billionaires, influencers, executives, leaders, and on and on and on and on. And today he's here on Unlock Your Potential. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it, man. I'm excited to learn more about you and your musician days, you know?
Oh, geez. Yeah, there's a whole other conversation we could have that would probably offer no value to the audience, but be very interesting to us.
well, they'll have a lot of juicy stories, you know, that'll be one.
That's true. Well, yeah, your music career, I know you, and I want to learn more about it, but I know you like, it was more in like the popular mainstream genres, and you're based in LA. Like you probably have a lot juicier body of stories than I do. I was a jazz musician in Houston, Texas, for 10 years.
That just means you're really disciplined, you know, because jazz is no joke.
I will admit to being known as a very disciplined person. Yeah, and I was self-taught, and I started when I was 16, teaching myself jazz and you know, piano at all levels. So yeah, that was pretty intense time in my life. I actually dropped out of high school because I didn't have time to go to class and teach myself piano. But anyway, this isn't about me. This is about you. In fact, let's start there. As a fellow musician turned entrepreneur turned human behavior, you know, person. I can't wait to hear another aligned story. So yeah, take me to the beginning.
Yeah, man. I've always had a passion. So actually I'll start before I would be the guy that was, my ear was always to the speaker. Music is a powerful tool. You know, I'm an artist. I'm a creative, really. At the end of the day, I love creating things that impact people. That's where I'm at now. And you know, I was in music for a while, and I'm 17 years old. I just hate feeling caged. You know, freedom is such a big value for me ever since I was a kid. You know, this inner freedom that you feel and this external freedom, I don't think anybody really likes to be controlled anyways. But I realized I was controlled by fear a lot. You know, like there was a lot of inner bondage, if you want to call it, and with insecurities. My nickname was passive. I would tell people, I would never say how I felt. People would say something like, yeah, cool, uh-huh. Even though like I would feel something different, like I bottled so much in. And then at 17 years old, a book was put in front of me and I was reading, and there were questions at the end of the chapter. Funny enough, a 17-year-old, my cousin gave me a Dr. Phil book, which is really funny, right? And I'm like, what the heck am I going to read this for? You know, I'm sitting here as an artist and all this other stuff. And then all of a sudden, I read the questions in the back, I'm flipping through it. And I'm like, wait, if I could change, if I could grow into anything that I want to be, if change is really possible, then that means sky's the limit for me. And so the freedom, like that whole value of freedom just opened up for me. So I got obsessed with fears. I got obsessed with the nervous system, with peak performance, with everything I could study. Like it would take so much courage for me, but I would find out, okay, this guy was on Forbes and he's really confident. I would email him from school and be like, hey, can I meet with you for like 20, you know, 15 minutes? And I'd go in and try to add value to him. And I would end up staying there for an hour and we became friends. And so my thought was, how do I study people that are already doing it? How do I study the people that are teaching at the highest level? So from like 17 to now, I've been obsessed, like literally even to this point. I'm at the gym listening to some neuroscientist or something inspiring instead of music, you know? And so, you know, because the common denominator I realized in everything I did was me. So I went through music. I was in a boy band. You know, you might see my outfit and still think I'm in one. But I was in a boy band for a while. And when that season was over, we did really well. I'm really, really grateful for it. But I realized something when I was on tour. We opened up for some amazing people. We got to perform on an album with Gladys Knight that won a Grammy. And it was just a lot of cool stuff. And all of a sudden, but I remembered being on stage once. We were in Puerto Rico in front of 19,000 people. And I looked around and I said, oh my gosh, this microphone and pop culture is so influential. Like whatever I say, people just cheer, you know, and you're like, because they're so in the moment with you that you can either influence somebody for good or for bad. I could say something and there's all these young people that were like, you know, and it was really cool because my group was very driven by love and by light and God and truth and whatever. And then people come up to you and be like, man, that impacted my life. And so I had this concurrent theme in my life with creativity and empowerment over and over and over. Did that, went on a, I had someone ask me if I want to start a business with them, started that. But in the mid-20s, I had a really strong feeling and I follow that feeling. To me, it's God, it could be intuition, whatever you want to call it, right? In your heart, it said, sell your shares and go back to school, go to USC. And I'm like, USC? Like, first of all, like I had a company, we just grew it internationally in a year and a half, which was awesome. And then all of a sudden, like, I was like, I have to follow what I know is right. Sold my shares, applied to go to school at USC, knowing I'm going to get in. Cause of course, when you feel called to something, it just comes easy, right? It doesn't.
Right.
And so I ended up getting rejected from USC my first year. And I was like, no, I know I'm supposed to go. Long story short, everybody told me I wasn't going to get in. The counselor said I was crazy for trying. USC told me I wasn't going to get in. The following year, I get in. My tuition's all paid for. I end up graduating USC, and I get into commercial real estate development because I was like, wait, creativity? I want to create a building. Because it's, for those of you guys, that if you don't know songwriting, what you do is you write a song, and if you're a songwriter on it, you release it, and then you get residual income from it. So you create something, bring people together around the vision. You create something and you create income around it, right? And I realized, wait, that's real estate. You have a vision, you bring the best people around you, you create something that people can constantly enjoy, and then you get to, you know, create income on it. And so I joined this amazing group. I became a director of investments of a $2 billion real estate company. And then, you know, long story short, had another feeling again, time to go. And I was like, time to go. I just got started, you know? And it was to bring everything I've learned in the last so many years before that. That was 2016, and merge it with pop culture. And so I left and I started all the way over. And I mean, I left millions of dollars on the table, started over. I saved, you know, it was about $100,000 in LA, around that in LA. And you just kind of like realize that'll last me until I go and make my next form of income and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But LA, if you lived in Los Angeles, you know, that goes really fast. Yeah. And so I found myself starting all the way over, down to almost nothing, you know, just building a new business, being like, oh yeah, I'm going to put out videos and everyone's going to pay attention and I'm going to do this and everyone's going to do this. I'm going to put out a podcast and it's going to be so good, you know, and nothing. You know, it was 395 people were following me. 391 were probably my friends, you know? And so I just took a step back and I realized the principle of success is the same in everything you do, right? It's who do you know? It's what do you know? Or what are you a master at? What's your X factor, right? And then it's taking action and executing it. And how do you build a system and capital around it, right? And so I just got to work, man. And it's been a really, really cool thing. So for the last 6 years, I've been merging pop culture and empowerment. I've partnered with some of the biggest music festivals in the world. And we've done some amazing campaigns that have impacted millions and millions of lives. So it's been really, really cool to see. But I'll tell you this, looking back, it may seem like my story was crazy. You know, boy band, business, USC. I took a stint at Goldman Sachs for a summer internship. I was like, this isn't for me. Real estate. To what I'm doing now, I look back and every single thing I've done has prepared me for who I am and where I am today. Everything. Even sitting down in an office doing real estate numbers, my understanding of money was so limited because of how I grew up. But when you sit there and you're buying $200 million buildings, your whole paradigm of money changes, business changes. So I feel like life was just preparing me for my real purpose and my mission, to be able to integrate all of it. And like you said, you can have all the expertise in the world, but not know how to market it or build a system around it. And it doesn't matter how many books are there at Barnes and Noble that will change people's lives that no one knows about. Right. And so, and how many people are really,
I don't want to say nobody knows about it, but I wrote one that not nearly enough people know about. So I feel that.
Go check out his book if you're listening, you know, which is really, really cool, you know, and I think it's the reality of marketing, branding. How do you put something together? And funny enough, is it quality? This year, I've been moving away from music. I have songs that aren't released. I've DJed a couple of music festivals, you know, in the last few years, but I had songs that aren't released. But in April, we formed a group, and we just to have a space where people could feel loved and seen. It was like positive music, uplifting music, like spiritually minded, stuff like that. We released a song in April. It's been on the Billboard charts for 13 weeks now. And I've like literally, it pulls me back in, and I'm really grateful for it. But I'll just say this to tell my story. I went from being a very passive, very, very insecure, very caged feeling type of person where I smiled on the outside, but felt completely stuck on the inside. And I hated it. I hated it. I hated hitting my limits. I hated feeling resistance in everything I wanted to do. And so realized that when we learn how to navigate our resistance, our emotions, we master our emotions, we get to master life in every area of our life, not just monetarily, which is a big one, because the more income you make, the more impact you could make. The more impact you make, the more income you could make, right? That's a cycle. But also my relationships, my confidence, my mental health. So I went from being passive to where I'm at today. And I'm so grateful. And that's why I do what I do, man. I just love teaching people how to be free.
So great story. I don't know what you've got going on, but I feel like just to answer the number of questions and talking points that I got just from that telling of your story, we both need to now clear our days because it's going to take at least 8 hours.
All right.
Which is unfortunately not consistent with the format of this show and not possible. But like, I'm being facetious as if to say like, holy hot damn, that's like some of the most aligned shit I've heard in a long time. So, it's funny. I tell people all the time because, you know, I've had this crazy twists and turns, entrepreneurial ups and downs, you know, successes, failures journey. And there's always this like, how do you train for that, right? And my answer is always, as a musician. Musician was my training. Like, improvisation over, especially jazz, over a set of defined, agreed-upon constraints within a collaborative environment. But on top of that, you're free to do whatever you want. And even the distinction between right and wrong is abstract, because you can make any wrong note right depending how you follow it, as if to say, oh, I meant to do that. Like,
right.
And then also doing it all with people watching.
Right.
Learning to calibrate our nervous system and manage our nervous system with an audience. Learning that, you know, ultimately anything, whatever we're doing, whatever we're creating, it might feel like it's all about us because we have this thing we want to get out. But ultimately, it's got to be also about the receiver and the connection and the experience that's created between the performer and the audience. Again, it's like all entrepreneurship, right? Right. And so I love that. I also want to share with you, you were 17, I was 16, even the way you described a building as a form of self-expression. So the book that changed my life by wrecking my life, but saving my life and preparing my life was The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand, which is a story of Howard Roark. He's an architect. And I don't know if you read the book, but he's like looking to be expressive through, he's the world's greatest architect and everybody's trying to keep him in a cage. And I read that when I was 16 and I dropped out of high school 6 months later because I wanted to be a jazz musician. So, and that launched me into business and all this other stuff. So it's like, I feel so many parallels. And ultimately what I hope the audience took from your story, first of all, the idea of doing what you're supposed to do is like, you didn't do any of what you're supposed to do. But you did exactly what you were called to do. Like, supposed to and called to are very often almost like extreme opposites. Right. And when you're living in supposed to, you're blocking out called to.
Absolutely.
And so I love your story of just like, and even the personal transformation that comes with that of going from like reserved and living a fear-based life to living a love-based life. That's, to me, that's the same shift from supposed to called to. So why don't we ask, because like, let's assume that thousands of people hear this. Yeah. And I've had many conversations like this where the vast majority of people go, that sounds great. I want that for myself, but I don't know how to do it. And when they say, I don't know how to do it, what they really are saying is, I don't know how to feel safe doing that. Because anybody could quit their job and move to Bali, right, but they don't feel safe or whatever their calling is. So I'm curious if you could back up and talk me through not only in the beginning how you felt safe, because I could say, oh, well, you were just an impetuous teenager and you didn't properly forecast consequences. But ever since, how have you maintained your nervous system and your ability to feel safe enough to survive while still living this adventure? Because I think that's where most people struggle.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely the best question. Because if your nervous system isn't on board for the future that you want, you will experience a massive amount of resistance. And it's just your body trying to keep you safe. So, you know, in order to really go after something, you know, I'm going to give you three thoughts that came to my mind. And I think each of them is its own nugget. First one is the pain of where I was way greater than going forward. I did not, I projected my life. I remember sitting there and I actually had a death in the family, someone that I dearly, dearly loved. And I remember just thinking, my gosh, that's going to be me one day. And do I really want to say I lived in a cage? What am I really want to say? And it was like, I literally borrowed all the pain from the future of staying where I was and brought it to that moment. And my nervous system said, no, we will not stay here. I will do what it takes to get the freaking heck out of here, you know? Mm. And so that was one of the things, is really counting the cost of staying where you are and then counting the cost of the change. And my nervous system, I'm not saying it didn't feel fear moving forward, but I had a boost of energy. The second thing I would say is, in order for anybody to go after anything, I think it was Tony Robbins that said this, you need four things. The first thing you need is you need to believe that it's possible. The second thing you need to believe is you need to believe there's a way to get there. The third thing you need to believe is that you can take that way there. And the fourth thing you need to believe is that it's worth it. Hmm. If you don't believe it's possible, you're not going to go after it, right? If you believe, oh, it's possible, but maybe there's no real way to get there in a way that, you know, or I can't take that way, but, you know, Jeff can.
Right.
Right. Or is it worth it? Is it worth the effort, the pain, the struggle? Because growth is not comfortable, because if you didn't feel resistance going to the next level, you would already be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And so that's number two, is understanding those four things. What is it in those four things that you may not subconsciously believe? And this is what the third one is most important. We need to come at this with a foundation of loving self-awareness first, radical honesty with love. And this is what I mean. A lot of us tell ourselves enough truth to be uncomfortable, but not enough truth to be free. We tell ourselves enough truth, and then we realize something we fall short in, and we beat ourselves up over it. And now we're in this cycle of, well, I can't discover everything about myself, because if I do, it means I'm not enough, or I'm a failure, or XYZ. And we get into such a protection mechanism that instead of looking inward to say, what is my body trying to tell me? What don't I feel safe in? And if it's okay that I get a little bit nerdy for a second, whenever you have a heightened emotional experience when you're younger, your body will remember it.
Yeah.
And to keep you safe in the future. And so I'll give you one example. I used to have a really self-sabotaging habit when it came to money. And whenever I would go after it and I would get to a certain limit, I was like, it was a six-figure limit. It was so weird. And I was doing things that should have made me way more than six figures. But mm-hmm. I would just, no, it's okay. Oh, I'll sabotage. Oh, I'll do it for free. Oh, this, oh, that. And then I was like, wait, what's wrong with me? There's resistance to making money for me. So my nervous system, I realized, wasn't on board. So I had to get, as Gabor Mate would call it, compassionately curious.
Mm. I love Gabor Mate, by the way. Oh, just got to say.
Yeah.
In the realm of Hungry Ghosts is like one of my favorite books.
Yeah, he's a freaking living legend, man.
Yeah.
And so like I got inward and I said, wait, my body, it's not like my body wants to sabotage me making money. There's a belief that if I make money, I'm not safe doing it. So what's the real reason? So I got really curious and I dove in, and there's a ton of processes you could do, but I literally just went to the emotion. And instead of being in my emotion, I was with it. You know, instead of like my, I was like, let me just get really curious. And I realized I have a subconscious belief that if I make money, I'll lose my relationship with my sister, and I value love over money. So whenever I would go to make money, I would sabotage it so I could maintain the quote unquote relationship with my sister, even though my sister wants me to succeed. Now I went, I worked it out with her. I did the process. As soon as I did, 2 weeks later, I broke six figures. And it's not just I think a lot of coaching is do more. It's like, it's not just do more. If it was do more, then you would have stuck to what you wanted to do a long time ago. It's understand your body and your nervous system of why doesn't it feel safe enough to go forward. And when you do, we can begin to do three things, and I can get into those three things if you want. But to me, to get a real breakthrough, you need each of these three things. And without one of them, I truly believe that you're going to have a much harder time breaking through.
I just started taking notes because I'm like, oh, this is good stuff. This is like content for days. So yeah, please share the three if you would. I'll write them down.
Yeah. And so if you think about it, there's a past element, a present element, a future element, right? The past element is, how do I resolve my past? Right? For me, it was going from passive to being confidently speaking in front of 45,000 people on stage for the last 6 years, right? At these festivals. How did I go from being passive to that? When I went into to do the work, I understood that in my past, when I used to speak up, I would dysregulate my father and he would throw things across the room. So I would lose the two things we seek for the most in humanity: safety and connection. So when I was younger, I lost safety because my father was angry, and I lost connection with my caretaker. So I learned, whenever you speak up, you lose connection and safety. So Henry, just don't say what you feel.
Yeah, which, by the way, those are the second and third levels of Maslow's hierarchy. Second is safety, and third is belonging, right? You know, i.e. connection. Yeah. So yeah, that's a deep trigger right there.
And it's interesting because when I lose belonging to my caretaker, I also lose the first one, which is my basic needs.
Right.
They may not feed me. They may not, you know, what if I don't get fed? What if I don't get taken care of? I'm just a little kid. I'm 3 or 4. And our nervous system remembers overwhelming life experiences. So it held on to the fact of, the belief became, if you speak up, you will lose safety, connection, and maybe even your survival. You won't survive. So when I did that, I had to go and resolve that past. I had to heal from the past traumas, whether they're, you know, big T or little T traumas. It doesn't matter. As long as it was a heightened emotion, your body will memorize it. Whenever you have a heightened emotion, your body memorizes it, right?
Remind me to tell you about the 90-day exercise we do at Entra. But anyway, okay. I don't want to interrupt right now.
So we can take a commercial break and go to it, or should we come back to it?
No, we'll come back to it.
Okay. So the past element is, how do you go back and heal and resolve the past, the traumas, the belief systems, the identities that you carried from the past? The second phase, or actually this is more like the first phase, is the present moment. How do you empower yourself in this moment? This is emotional mastery. An emotion comes up. You don't have the emotion doesn't have you. You just have the emotion. You process your emotion. You're able to be powerfully present, I call it. You're able to lovingly lead yourself. You're able to actually step in with a set of inbuilt confidence and be present in this moment, that no matter what comes at you, you're not stuck in your head. You actually can align yourself and let your whether you want to call it your mindfulness, your higher self, your infinite self, your spirit self, whatever, to take the lead versus your body and your emotions taking the lead.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to empower the present, because if you can't, how do you heal the past or how do you build the future? It all happens now, because all we have is now. And now, and now, and now, you know, and that goes on and on. And then third element is, how do you reprogram your subconscious mind to actually build in the elements of, this is my identity, this is my belief system, right? My identity went from, if I make a lot of money, then I'll lose relationship with my sister, to now, when I make a lot of money, I will be able to bless my family, bless my sister, bless more people, build the system that I need, do all these things. And which one's going to be more expansive? The newer identity, the newer belief system that I built. And it's so important to understand where we're at with a loving self-awareness. Because if my identity was, oh, I'm not somebody that does well in life, or I am just afraid, or I am just this, my nervous system will fight tooth and nail to live into that identity. So we have to be able to resolve our past. We have to be able to empower ourselves in this moment. How do I get certainty now in an uncertain world, especially where I'm going? And then how do I reprogram my nervous system, my subconscious mind, into the thing that's going to help me in my desired future and my impact? So those three things are imperative after you get past the deep awareness.
So I kind of say stuff like this a lot on this show because I'm blessed to get to, I always say, amazing conversations with amazing people, right? This is like literally one of the most aligned conversations I've ever had. In other words, like if I had said, hey, Henry, can you explain my beliefs to me, even though we've never met? That's basically what you're doing. Like, it's actually crazy because, so a little bit of context here and for the audience, Henry and I are meeting each other for the first time, right? We were connected with our teams and my booker, and here we are. So I have this platform called Entre Institute, and it's basically a personal development company that paired with, you know, call it academic knowledge of how to do different types of businesses because people want to become entrepreneurs. But it's their subconsciouses, it's their nervous systems, it's their amygdalas and their hippocampuses, their emotional memories. That's why they don't take the leap.
Right.
It's not because like, well, you know, I couldn't balance my checkbook and I, or I can't afford it or I don't have time. Like those are all the reasons that our mind will serve up to us to justify the fact that underneath it, we're scared and our identity isn't aligned with our desires. And so we have this like hardcore personal development approach and we have a whole life operating system we give people to try to like automate the steps, even as they're growing into the belief in the identity, to ultimately become successful livers of the entrepreneurial life, which, by the way, the French word entrepreneur, its closest English translation is adventurer. It means to live a life of adventure. It doesn't mean to found a business, although that's often what it includes, because as a practical matter, if you don't found a business, it's very unlikely that you'll ever have enough income to live your adventure, right? I mean, the average raise in this country is 2.3%, and the long-term rate of inflation is about 50% higher than that. So everybody's just getting poorer unless they start a business. And that's the only reason we even really teach entrepreneurship. It's not because I'm like, well, the world needs more businesses. It's like, no, people need a business. We call it a success vehicle because it actually unlocks the life they want. So anyway, that's just a little bit about me. But I feel like you just articulated beautifully and frankly, what's novel and the reason Entre is not just another online, you know, course to start a business, because those are a dime a dozen and goodness knows there's enough pretend gurus hawking such courses. The reason we're fundamentally different and like actually kind of call it more real in the world is because we're taking a trauma-based, nervous system-based, personal development-based, even at times spirituality-based approach to becoming the person that can actually go have the success with online business or with any type of entrepreneurship. And so that's just so you have the background and you just beat it. Like I almost want to like clip what you just said and send it to all our students. Like, hey, hear it from somebody else of why you have to do this work, because learning how to run ads on Facebook, as much as it seems like that's what you need to be focused on, if you don't do the nervous system work and the trauma work and the healing work, you're going to hit that ceiling that Henry talked about.
1,000,000%, man. It's so much easier to, and I love what you said, Jeff, because here's the beautiful part about what you just said. Once you learn how to do that work, sky is the limit.
Because it's iterative.
Yeah, because
you're just unlocking new levels constantly. Yep.
New level, new devil, baby. Whenever right. You do one thing, you're gonna hit resistance point. At the next thing, your nervous system is like, "What do you?" Because think about it. Like this is, you know this, but it's like whenever you do anything new, your nervous system is gonna give you resistance for one of two things, if not both. One is we've never done this before, so it's scary. It's uncertainty. Uncertainty is fear. What's around that corner? Is there something that's dangerous around the corner? We're really comfortable here. I don't call it a comfort zone. I call it a safety zone. It's what your nervous feels safe doing. Who feels comfortable in their comfort zone? I don't know that many people that do, genuinely. Because on subconscious level, you're like, I know there's something calling me to more. I want, you know, there's something different. Or it resembles something in the past that is hindering you back. So it's harder to run when you have weights behind you. What if you could actually begin to understand how to leverage them to launch you forward versus keep you stuck? I just got an email from it was Mastin Kipp, and he said something like, a regulated, here, I have it right here. It was really, really cool. I texted to some friends and my wife. I said, with a regulated nervous system, life's challenges become opportunities for growth instead of activating your defenses and keeping you stuck.
Say that again, if you would.
Yeah. With a regulated nervous system, life's challenges become opportunities for growth instead of activating your defenses and keeping you stuck. So the simplicity of learning how to manage your emotions and master your emotions, man, not only do you want to regulate, but how do you use them to launch you forward, to enhance, to pivot you forward? And I'm sure we can dive into a 12-hour workshop on that right now, you know, but it's fascinating, and it's the coolest thing to me, because it means I get to become who I want to become in the most effective way that I can do it. And there's a way to do it.
So I feel like there's a dynamic underneath this conversation that's probably interesting to press on and be really clear about. Because you've said a couple things that reference this dynamic. You talked about how everything that happened in your life was leading you to this moment, right? And we talk about emotional memories, and we talk about trauma, and we talk about, you know, and there's actually two places in the brain. I know you know this, but for the audience, there's two places in the brain where memories get stored. There's the, call it the facts, get stored, you know, essentially they get logged in a file cabinet in our neocortex our neocortex is essentially has the arm that pulls in and pulls out the files in the cabinet, right? But then we have emotional memory, which only stores certain events, those events that you could say left a mark, in the sense that I remember, not just I remember what happened, but what I actually remember most is how I felt, right? And those get stored in the hippocampus, which is in the lower in the brain, in the limbic system, where all of our safety decisions are made. That's where like our amygdala is, our fear centers, and actually our buying decisions. When we invest money, those decisions are made in the limbic system. And that's why, like you were saying, we tend to have what we would call irrational beliefs and feelings around money, because that's stored in emotional memory, not logical memory. And so I guess I say all that to say, when people think of their, like you referenced who people want to be, that this is the work that can get them where they want to be. What I think is one of the embedded challenges in this kind of growth work of like, hey, here's your present life. Here's the life you visualize. Let's build that bridge or close that gap or whatever, is my belief, and I kind of want to get your take on this, but my belief is that vision of the life they want, we may have a lot of, call it control or decisions to make about the circumstances of that life. Like, well, do I want to live on the beach or do I want to live in the mountains, for example? But who we are in that life, I actually think that's already predetermined in a sense by our life experience, by our natural aptitudes, by what I call our success DNA. And that a lot of becoming that person is actually surrendering to that person or reading the clues in our life that have been pointing us toward that person the whole time. Freud would have called it, you know, the ego ideal or the superego, Nietzsche called it the Übermensch, right? It's like this grand version of ourself that we're evolving towards, that is already, I believe, is already there. And a lot of getting there is saying, okay, I just want to do the work on myself, my nervous system, my emotional self-regulation, my communication abilities, my level of income and resources, like all these different, call it just establishing the conditions that allow me to continue to the journey toward that point in the future. And I'm curious of your take on that, because I'm putting sort of a teleological, almost like spiritual design layer into it. That's like, we're already destined to become something great. The work is getting out of the way.
Right. There's two things that come to my mind. One was a story that happened to me. I remember when I was first coming up and like speaking, and wanting to speak. And I was going to one of my mentors. I've studied so many modalities, but she was a neurolinguistic programming mentor. And mm-hmm. I remember seeing somebody just speak with confidence and just like tearing it open. I remember being just like, wow, that confidence is incredible. I want that confidence, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, she comes up to me. She goes, Henry, you want to know something? I said, what? She goes, if you spot it, you got it. What you see in him that you love is already inside of you. And you, it's the seedling inside of you. You wouldn't see it if it wasn't inside of you. And it's funny. I remember the moment I was on stage. This was, I think, my second year at the festival. I was literally in front of 45,000 people. And I remember just feeling like energy was ripping out of me. And it was just a powerful experience. And I remember walking off. I was like, dude, that's what I saw in that guy years ago. The reason I was so aligned to it was because it was aligned to me, you know? And the second thing is, you said something really good. You said our past gives us pointers to who that is. We already have that inside of us. One way to simply put it, in my opinion, is what are the moments in your life that you've had the most joy, the most presence, the most regulation, the most power? Go back to those moments. What were you doing and what was the emotion that you felt the most? And I bet you anything, if you fast forward into the future that you really want, you're looking also for a similar emotion that you felt back then. And, you know, if you follow Joe Dispenza's work or anything like that, I always ask myself, well, if those things live on that frequency of emotion, that frequency of being, right? Not just doing, but being, then what are my main emotions that I'm seeking to feel and how can I incorporate more of them into my life now, right? If it's freedom, if it's, like a liberated happiness is mine, right? Like when I feel joyful, but I feel free, right? And so, because it's not, I was like, well, I love growth, but why do I love growth? Because it brings me this emotion along with it, right? And so we can always look back at the moments in our life that have truly made us feel the most aligned, the best we've ever felt. Go to those specific moments and ask yourself, what was the core experience that I had there? And is that also included in the future? I would most likely say it's a yes that you really, really want. You know, and so I that's one thing that I realized is I went back and I was like, man, and then how do I live that now? How do I bring more of that into my life now?
Yeah. So can we double click on this and like demonstrate the application of this with yourself as a test study of like, hey, I went back, I observed these feelings and these types of experiences, and this is how I am currently recreating those dynamics and or striving to moving forward. Yeah, like give a demo if you would.
Hey there, real quick. I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts. This could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
So I asked myself the question, okay, when do I feel the most alive and aligned, right? Mm-hmm. I went back to different moments, but I said, let me go back to the earliest moment I can remember or a very strong moment. And I remember specifically I was standing on the right side of the stage and I felt liberated and free and the most authentic version of myself. And I went back into that moment. I said, okay, let me go back into that moment. Let me look through my own eyes. Let me see what I saw, hear what I heard, and let me just do my best to get into the feeling. And I, you know, if you emotionally visualize something enough, you will experience it again, right? That's why we get triggered, right? We experience right. Something in the past and it comes up, but we could also have a very positive activation. And so I went back into that moment and I just started asking myself the question, okay, well, what was I doing? Who was around me? What was the experience like? And I started to begin to taste it. You know what? If you're listening, can I take people through a quick exercise?
Yeah, please.
Okay. I'm going to show you the power of using your imagination to move you forward. Okay. I'm going to give you, if you're driving, do not close your eyes. If you're at the gym, don't close your eyes. You can come back to this at whatever timestamp it is. It's literally a two minute process. So I want everybody, if you can, take a deep breath. And just close your eyes for a second. and just allow yourself to use your imagination. There's no right or wrong way to do this. And I'm going to give you a quick version of it. And you may experience something or you may not, but just allow yourself to experience it. And what I want you to do is imagine yourself sitting at the most comfortable space in your home. Wherever you are, just imagine sitting there. Notice how your feet feel on the floor, maybe your cross leg. Maybe notice how you feel on whatever seat you're under. And just, I want you to imagine standing up and walking toward the refrigerator. And as you walk toward the refrigerator, once you get there, imagine holding the handle, feeling the texture of the handle, opening up the refrigerator and feeling the cold air just blow on you. And as you look in the refrigerator, allow yourself to notice a lemon. And imagine grabbing that lemon and you feel the cold skin on that lemon and bring it close to your nose and imagine smelling that lemon. Smell the lemon and just notice the scent of the lemon. And with the lemon in your hand, close the refrigerator, feeling the wind blow on your face. And imagine walking over to the counter and allow yourself just to put the lemon on the counter and imagine grabbing a knife and cutting the lemon in half. And as you allow yourself to imagine the lemon being cut in half, imagine it being the juiciest lemon you've ever seen, just squirting juice everywhere. And as you cut it in half, it opens up and you just notice droplets on that lemon. And you grab the half a lemon and you cut that in half. And you notice juice squirting everywhere. And imagine grabbing that quarter of a lemon, putting it over your mouth and squeezing that lemon into your mouth. And it drips into your mouth and take a bite of that lemon. How many people's mouths salivated even a little bit? Did your mouth salivate even a little?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I totally
saw your mouth moving a little bit. That was a really fast way to do that. A lot of people, when you do it, their mouth has even a little bit of physical reaction. There is no lemon, but you had a physical reaction just by using your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that was a really quick way to do that. And normally, but the more you vividly imagine something, the more your body will experience it. You can experience things without physically experiencing them. In a positive or a negative way. That's what anxiety is a lot of time. We visualize the future as it going completely wrong and we experience the future as if it's happening now and we feel the fear of it, right? Or when you're really excited, when the kids are excited to go trick-or-treating or doing whatever they're doing, like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. They're imagining the future and it's causing an excitement. We're borrowing from the future. We can borrow from the past, just like if you hear a song on the radio and it reminds you of your ex and you're like, freaking change the station. Or you hear a song on the radio that reminds you of the first dance you ever had with your loved one. Or it reminds you of your father or a song they listen to. There are powerful anchors to emotion. So what I'd say is when you go to a place for me was on that stage, on the right of that stage. When I saw myself just screaming to everybody, I saw people cheering. I noticed what was around me. I started to feel the emotion and even a glimpse of it. I said, what does that feeling feel like for you, Henry? And I said, just, there's no right or wrong way to do this. It's just explorative. And I said, you know, I feel joy and I feel liberated. I feel free. I feel unleashed, you know? And so for me, it was like, okay, I wrote it down. Unleashed is an emotion that I would like to experience more in my life. So then when I architect my week, when I look at my day, when I look at what I do, I realize do I incorporate more things in my life that bring me more of this or less of this? Do I put people around me that bring me more of this or less of this? You know, and how can I build more experiences to let my nervous system have disconfirming experiences that it's possible outside of that stage, right? And sometimes like, oh no, that's because 45,000 people are cheering. It's like, yeah, maybe, but also I was living on purpose. I was in alignment. I was in flow. And so even today, what I do is literally like, this is my notebook that I have. I write down every single morning, you know, is everything on your schedule today important?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I look at it. And so I have other questions. What's my assignment? I pray. And I was like, what's my assignment today? What's in alignment with who I really am today? But this is where you just start getting curious and you start realizing what makes you tick. It's not a one-time thing, but what makes you tick? What makes you alive? Because most of us are going to get to the end of our life and realize we sleptwalk through life. And that's not a way to live. the greatest gift we have is choice. And if I can wake up today and I can say, you know what can I do today to choose? I may not be able to choose what happens, but I could choose how I show up for what happens. And I'll tell you this story, man. Like, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. It was one of the most difficult things that I'd ever gone through in my life. She was my best friend, went down to 70 pounds. I'm taking care of her. And it was one of the roughest things that happened in my life. I lost my father 2 years before that. And I remember telling myself, Henry, you have a choice to make. And it was a serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity, the peace to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I said, I cannot control what happens to her, but you better believe I'm going to control how I show up for her and how I allow myself to show up for myself, to process this. I'm not going to emotionally override it. I'm not going to BS myself, but I'm going to show up. And I remember the moment she passed. I remember I was holding her hand, and I remember she passed away, and I looked, and I was like, and I was mad, angry, sad, happy she wasn't suffering, all the things. And I took what I call a sacred pause, because I realized if I just react, the word react means to act out the past, to act again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to be a puppet to this life. I'm not going to be a puppet to other things in my life. I want to choose from this life. And I realized what decision I make right now is going to determine the rest of my life. And I remember looking at her. I took what I call a sacred pause. And I said, and I remember this metaphor, and it was the carrot, the egg, and the tea bag. And at that moment, the metaphor is you put an egg in hot water, a carrot in hot water, and a tea bag in hot water. And after 10 minutes, you pick up the egg, and what happens to it? It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
The carrot, you pick it up after 10 minutes. What happens to it? It's soft. After 10 minutes, you pick up the tea bag. What happens to it? It's made the water colorful, smell better, taste better, look better. All the characteristics were taken out of that. And I said, Henry, you have a choice to make. I said, be pissed, be sad, grieve. But what you decide right now will determine the rest of your life. And I looked at my mom at that moment. I said, Mom, I will honor your life with how I live mine. I will honor you with how I live my life. And every day of my life, it's just like I made that decision. I miss her. I love her. And at the same time, that's driven me a way forward. Decisions will determine our destiny, especially in hard moments. If we can learn to pause and be the curator, the chooser of our life, one of the best things I've ever chose was to be the chooser. Not waking up every day and just kind of winging it and just going with the flow and letting my boss and other people determine my feelings. Yeah, sure, I feel things, but who gets to process that? When we go back to trauma and we go back to that process, I need to be the loving leader to myself that I wanted growing up. I need to look inward with that compassion and love and say, I got you. We're here. I'm today years old. And going back to that process of what I said is when I look at my day, I want to create the day to navigate the emotional state that I want to live in. Because well, guess what? When Henry's in a heightened emotional state, guess what it blesses? His family, the people I serve, my community, you know, people I'm with. So it's cutting the strings of being a puppet and learning to take ownership. So whatever that process is for you, when you go back and look at your life and say, what are the feelings I want to feel in my life more? What are things I want to create more? What are things I need to let go of a little bit more? My second TED Talk, which was what we talked about, was in St. George, was about boundaries. I realized I need to bring things close. It wasn't a yes or a no. Boundaries are a how much, right? How much resources and energy am I allotting to things in my life? And depending on where I place things, closer to my inner circle that gets the most time, that's going to determine a lot of the energy and the feelings and the lifestyle, the energy I experience in my life. And right now, everybody listening, you could make one decision to say, I'm going to lovingly look inward and stop beating myself up and begin to lovingly look at myself and process my emotions in a healthy way and also become the architect of my life to design, as you said, the life holistically that I want in all the pillars.
What is so much good stuff in what you said. I'll tell you that the two things that jump out. One, when you talk about, like deathbed regret kind of thing, and that like there's really, I say this, the way I say it to people a lot is there's only one choice you fundamentally have to make in your life, which is who decides. Is it me? Am I going to live a life where I decide, or am I going to live a life where I surrender my choice and other people decide for me? Well, there's a body of evidence around which is the the wiser choice, assuming that the goal of life is to not die regretting what you did with it. Because the number one regret of the dying, according to a survey of palliative care doctors who spend their time with the dying, and thousands of people are represented, the number one regret is, I wish I had lived a life that was more true to myself and less true to what other people expected of me. That is the number one thing that we're all going to be thinking when we're running out of time. And so, honestly, why I do what I do every day is to empower people with, I have a mechanism called the wheel of growth. And there's the three legs of action are knowledge, environment, and resources. And it's just, how do I get people the knowledge to empower themselves to live a life of choice and self-determination? How do I create an environment in which they'll be supported for doing that? What are all the other resources that we need? And there's three. There's capital or actual material resources. There's different types of tools, and there's different types of relationships, strategic relationships. And then ultimately the fourth piece of pie in the quadrant is habits. Like, what do I actually, am I disciplined myself to do and wake up and do every day? And what's the structural frame, the structural support for this life? And like, I'm just like trying to build this world that has all this stuff for people, because fundamentally it's to just get them to choose. Like you said, I love the way you said it. Like, to first choose to choose. And once you choose, to say, I'll do anything, I'll do everything, whatever it takes to put the pieces in place that make it possible to choose, because ultimately that's the one standard. And this is a data-backed statement. That's the one standard I'm most likely to be measuring my life against when it's running out. Is, did I choose to choose? And having chosen to choose, did I then do everything I could to put the pieces in place that allowed me to live a life of choice? I would literally go down this rabbit hole with you for hours. And I'm not even asking permission. Like, we're staying in touch here. But the other thing I want to say is, you've talked multiple times about borrowing from the future. And that is such a powerful concept to me. The note that I took, the first thing you said, I wrote down, borrow against future pain to build leverage against present comfort. And you referenced that earlier, but then you also just now are talking about borrowing against future joy and the types of experiences that you know are possible and that you want to create for yourself. Borrow against future joy to create excitement and energy in what might feel like a lethargic present, because if you want to live a life of choice, you got a lot of damn work to do and you probably need to get up earlier. So I just love that idea of using the future as a bank to borrow against to shape our present. Thank you for that idea. I'm going to be vamping on it all day, man.
Thank you, man. And we never got a chance to do your 90-day thing, but I will say one last thought that you brought to my mind was, if you're listening to this point right now, one choice you consistently make, in 3 years, you could be in a much different place if you just stuck with it. What's the choice you need to make right now and just stick with it? In the ups and the downs, that's a life. But when you stick with it and you can stick with it over and over again, what's possible for you? A whole lot.
I love that. I love that. Find one thing to start choosing differently and just stick with it.
Just do it.
And I love it.
It happened in a week, maybe not a month, but you continue to focus on that, anything can be possible in a longer time.
Charles Duhigg, the author of The Power of Habit, calls certain things keystone habits, that you build one habit and there's a whole cascade of other habits and other experiences that originate from that one thing that you shift. Dude, thank you. This has been incredible. How can the world go get more Henry Amar goodness?
Man, thank you so much. My social media is at Henry Amar, HENRYAMMAR. It's on all the stuff. I have a podcast called Making It Happen with Henry Amar. I just love serving people, you know, on all the platforms. So anything you come by, say hello, but really appreciate you having me, Jeff, and appreciate you listening. If you're listening, and I wish you all seriously, sincerely the best, and let's freaking make life epic, you know?
Heck yeah, man. Well, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful conversation. So much enjoyed this. And of course, to all the viewers and listeners out there, you know what I'm going to tell you. You're the best part of the show. You're why I do it every day. And I'm so glad we got to spend this time together. I'll see you next time. Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential,
It would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, and especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.